Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Could It Be B12? An Epidemic of Misdiagnoses. Second Edition by Sally M. Patchelock, RN, BSN, and Jeffrey J. Stewart, DO. Narrated by Susie Althans. Vitamin B12 deficiency is an epidemic causing more health damage than the polio epidemic, and it can now be prevented through simple screening and treatment. Sally M. Patchelock, RN, BSN. Foreword. Recently, at a European conference where both Sally Patchelock and I were speakers, I conveyed to the delegates how much I value this book by stating that wherever I travel, two books always accompany me. One is the Holy Bible. The other is Sally's book, Could It Be B12? Could It Be B12 speaks only the truth, and in doing so, it gives life back to those with B12 deficiency who were well on their way to losing their lives altogether. The authors, Sally M. Patchelock, RN, and Jeffrey J. Stewart, DO, have committed themselves to this noble cause. They have made this book an invaluable resource for medical students, practicing physicians, and other healthcare professionals. And while it is written in a scientific and highly professional manner, Sally and Jeffrey have succeeded in making the book clear and simple enough to be useful to B12 deficiency patients, their families, and friends. It is unfortunate that despite all the up-to-date evidence that is now available, the medical profession as a whole are taught to believe that B12 deficiency only affects the hematopoietic system. In other words, that it is simply a blood disorder causing anemia and producing megaloblastic, pernicious, red blood cells in the marrow. What Sally and Jeffrey have accomplished in this remarkable book is to establish the opposite. B12 deficiency is a multi-system, polyglandular, multi-point metabolic poisonous, homocysteine, disease or syndrome. Sally's interest in this problem began in 1985, when she herself was misdiagnosed time after time. In spite of typical megaloblastosis and a strong family history clearly indicative of B12 deficiency, this prompted Sally, an emergency room nurse, and her husband Jeffrey, an emergency medicine physician, to conduct their own research, as well as to gather, analyze, and collate numerous supporting papers published by reputable universities and well-known researchers. Since I read Could It Be B12 in 2005, 5 quotations from the book kept coming back to me. I wondered why. Then I realized that I am also enduring the same burden as Sally and Jeffrey, since I stumbled on my first case of B12 deficiency in 1981. Since that time, I have been diagnosing, treating, and continually monitoring over 1,000 B12 deficient patients. In other words, 18% of my practice population, as opposed to the 0.1% nationally diagnosed. The 5 striking quotes from the book. Noted physicians had fought the battle to bring the B12 deficiency epidemic to light and had lost. What chance did I have of making a difference? An epidemic is raging, invisible to the public, and virtually undetected by medical professionals. But I could not come to terms with a continual parade of lives ruined by failure to detect and treat a simple to identify, simple to treat, simple to cure disorder. This is one of the most preventable and most curable of all medical scourges, but only if we choose to act. Together, we can stop this epidemic in its tracks. I ask myself why the crucial evidence-based knowledge outlined in this book is not accepted, and why the diagnosis and treatment of B12 deficiency is not part of the mainstream practice throughout all the continents. Is there a deliberate conspiracy to suppress and discredit this knowledge and the people who have been battling to bring this to the world's attention? Who is currently profiting from blocking this simple, innocuous treatment of a vitamin deficiency? This treatment can save patients from a miserable existence which eventually leads to a slow, painful, and premature death. caring for these patients during their often prolonged course of illness costs governments billions of dollars and relatives and friends time, money, and pain. And yet, these are the alarming facts. The attention paid to B12 deficiency by medical and government bodies is steadily decreasing, not increasing. Awareness of this condition is almost non-existent among the current generation of physicians and neurologists. Information about this deficiency disease is downplayed and even presented in a confusing manner in the most recent editions of reputable medical textbooks. Even when clinicians know that they should be treating in accordance with good medical practice, investigate, diagnose, treat, and save lives, they are afraid to commence treatment because they lack up-to-date national guidelines. This results in worldwide misdiagnosis, mistreatment, untold misery, and tragic deaths. It is a huge challenge to change entrenched medical ideas, even when these ideas lead to the death or disability of patients. It is an even bigger challenge when pharmaceutical companies make billions of dollars annually by promoting symptom-modifying drugs that merely mask symptoms of B12 deficiency and fight against those who seek a cure. But Sally and Jeffrey, please do not get disheartened. We in the UK and many others across the world admire and love you, and are most grateful to you both for your valuable contribution. Whosoever shall endure till the end shall reap the reward in due season. Joseph Chandy, Kyalakakam, MD, UK National Health Service Medical Practitioner, 2010 Glory of India Award winner for medical services to the community. Preface to the second edition. More than half a decade has passed since we published the original version of our book. The response from the public has been overwhelming. We've touched more lives than we ever expected, and in this new edition, we relate the stories of people, young and old, whose B12 deficiency diagnoses saved their health and even their lives. We will also update you on the latest research, new case studies in the medical literature, and the best tests and treatments. Sadly, the response from many in the medical community has been apathy or even outright hostility. We have been actively educating the public and healthcare professionals about vitamin B12 deficiency and its frequent misdiagnosis for more than 10 years. In 2005, we wrote the first edition of Could It Be B12? 4 years later, we declared 2009 as the year of B12 awareness, trying to get healthcare professionals and governmental agencies to support our efforts and recognize the fourth week in September as B12 Awareness Week annually. Our efforts are making slow progress, but we are not yet winning the war on misdiagnosed vitamin B12 deficiency. Not only is most of the healthcare community still apathetic about this disorder, but so are the government, the media, and the insurance industry. Despite the fact that untreated B12 deficiency can cause serious health problems, injury, disability, and even premature death. There is a pattern of ignorance and accepted neglect regarding vitamin B12 deficiency that must change. Unfortunately, the only avenue may be the courtroom. $1 million malpractice settlements are now being awarded to injured B12 deficient victims. But prevention is a far better solution for everyone. Much is said about preventative medicine, but is it all so much hot air? Diagnosing B12 deficiency is simple and inexpensive, and treating it costs only a few dollars per month. Failure to treat this disorder at an early stage allows conditions to develop that often cause lifelong disability, resulting in enormous treatment costs or even death. After the release of the first edition of the book, we have reached out to the medical community, healthcare community, hospitals, and the government, including three surgeons general, congressional representatives from both parties, directors of insurance companies, and Medicare officials. Yet overwhelmingly, we encounter apathy. Hardly anyone cares, and very few want to get involved or are proactive in changing this system failure. Yet there are small signs of change. In June 2009, for example, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one of the most prestigious bodies in the field of medicine, issued a report stating that one out of every 31 people over age 50 is B12 deficient. The number is much smaller than our findings, but the CDC's report is a step in the right direction. There have been highs and lows since the first edition of Could It Be B12? Came out. The public response, in the form of letters and testimonials, has been astonishing. We are making a difference. A 10-month-old baby was diagnosed in March 2006 with severe B12 deficiency because the baby's grandmother read our book and gave it to her daughter-in-law to read. The family had the baby tested, and the results revealed he was severely B12 deficient, a problem undetected by his pediatrician. You'll hear this mother's triumphant story in Chapter 12. Another bittersweet victory is that of the Groover family, whose nightmare we also detail in Chapter 12. Their child was severely injured by B12 deficiency in 2001, and as a result, the Groovers have joined us in our B12 awareness campaign and are vocal B12 advocates. The Groovers wrote to their governor, Bob Riley, of Alabama, describing their son's needless misdiagnosis and lifelong brain injury. In response, Governor Riley assigned State Health Officer Donald E. Williamson, M.D., to investigate what is being done in Alabama regarding vitamin B12 deficiency and what the state might do in the future to alert their citizens and healthcare practitioners to this epidemic. In August of 2009, Dr. Williamson directed his staff to develop and disseminate a B12 deficiency, B12 awareness press release to newspapers, public health clinics, the Women, Infants, and Children, WIC program, and the Health Provider Standards section of the Alabama Department of Public Health, which regulates standards for nursing homes. He also sent the release to the Alabama chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Alabama Academy of Family Physicians, and the Alabama Hospital Association. Governor Riley and Dr. Williamson are the first governmental leaders in the United States to address the problem of misdiagnosed B12 deficiency. This is exactly what politicians and people in power should be doing, but few are. We hope that Governor Riley and Dr. Williamson will be role models for other leaders to follow. In 2009, Martin Hooper, executive chairman of the Pernicious Anemia Society, PAS, of the United Kingdom, joined forces with us and created UK B12 Awareness Week in the last week of October. Together with the PAS, we gathered in the House of Commons in London on October 28, 2009, to discuss the issue with members of Parliament. On May 28, 2010, as a result of the ongoing work of the PAS, the Medical Director of the National Health Service, NHS, in Wales, Dr. Stephen Hunter, became involved and requested a review of vitamin B12 deficiency and its diagnosis and treatment by the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence, NICE, in the UK. Dr. Hunter studied the PAS website forum group, which contains hundreds of testimonials from patients who are misdiagnosed and are receiving improper treatment. We were pleased to learn that the first edition of our book helped to galvanize Dr. Hunter's resolve to get B12 deficiency reviewed by NICE. This is a major victory for those who suffer from B12 deficiency. We hope that NICE will approve the review and create new protocols that will impact patients worldwide. On another positive note, in 2009, we became acquainted with Dr. Joseph Chandy, a general practitioner working with four doctors in the UK, with a registered list of 5,700 patients. Little did we know that a seasoned clinician some 3,500 miles away and an ocean apart had been silently fighting the same battle as Sally had for so many years and had shared the same motivation, passion, dedication, and persecution. Patience and fate would bring us together. Dr. Chandy has been treating patients with neuropsychiatric symptoms with or without macrocytosis using B12 replacement since 1981. In contrast to the national estimate that pernicious anemia only affects 0.1% of the population, Dr. Chandy finds that 18% of his patient population exhibits symptoms consistent with B12 deficiency and, perhaps more importantly, benefit from B12 therapy. On two occasions, each for more than 18 months at a time, in 2002 and 2007, B12 treatment was withdrawn from his patients at government insistence, causing untold and sometimes irreversible damage and suffering. Dr. Chandy and his assistant, Hugo Minnie, PhD, himself a B12 deficiency sufferer, are making tremendous changes in the UK, fighting for their patients by writing letters to Parliament, assisting the PAS, writing academic papers for publication, and assembling evidence for submission to regulatory bodies in the UK. Hugo authors the B12 Deficiency Patient Support Group website, www.b12d.org, which gives valuable first-line advice to thousands of people worldwide. On a low note, we ended 2009 with two tragic emails. The first was from a mother from the Midwest, telling us how her 6-month-old baby began showing signs of developmental delay. Her daughter's pediatrician was aware of this, but just continued to watch her closely. At 13 and a half months of age, the child was finally diagnosed with severe B12 deficiency and began treatment in November 2008. 2 years later, the child has improved somewhat, but it appears that she was diagnosed and treated too late, and will suffer a permanent brain injury. The second email was from a cardiothoracic surgeon who went to Harvard Medical School. He wrote in December telling us of his misdiagnosed and mistreated B12 deficiency, which occurred in 2009 and has caused him neurologic injury. Clearly, we are still not winning the war on B12 deficiency, and we need your help. Who will be next in this insidious chain of ignorance, secrecy, and misdiagnosis? Who needs to be injured for this disorder to finally be recognized and diagnosed early? Will it take a president, a pope, a politician, a movie star, a TV personality, a newscaster, or a sports hero? What and who will it take for the world to take notice? We need to address not just the medical community, but also insurance providers, legislators, and trial lawyers. As medical professionals, it goes against our grain to say this, but often, only after prodding by the legal profession, does any meaningful change occur in medicine. It takes a landmark case, and often several landmark cases, to get the attention of most physicians. Based on our decades of experience, as well as the experience of others, we are convinced this may be the only avenue for meaningful change. And change must happen, because millions of lives and billions of dollars are at stake. At this moment, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, is taking action to improve the quality of care in hospitals and reduce the number of never events, preventable medical errors that result in serious consequences for the patient. The evidence you will hear in this book clearly shows that undiagnosed and untreated B12 deficiency, similar to never events, is a condition that should never happen. Every day, patients are walking in and out of healthcare institutions with undiagnosed B12 deficiency. Yet the ignorance, apathy, and severe knowledge deficit of the medical community allow this poor practice to occur hundreds of thousands of times each year. Healthcare professionals and the public must band together to end this global epidemic once and for all. Along with Dr. Chandy, we envision the year 2012 as the year B12 awareness becomes public policy and updated protocols for early diagnosis and treatment are created. We invite all healthcare professionals, along with the public, to join us in this mission. In the United Kingdom, we are beginning to see the fruits of our labor. On September 25, 2010, Dr. Chandy received the highly prestigious Glory of India Award, honoring his lifetime of service in primary care and his work on vitamin B12 deficiency. Prime Minister David Cameron invited Dr. Chandy to a reception in Downing Street. Members of Parliament, Priti Patel and Graham Morris, have written to Secretary of State Andrew Lansley requesting that the UK government investigate how B12 deficiency impacts patients, the national health system, and employers. This is a major victory, and we are hopeful that their investigation will lead to the introduction of a screening program, updated protocols, and ongoing research into the diagnosis and treatment of B12 deficiency. In this second edition of Could It Be B12? We include more tragic stories and heartening successes from our own patient population, from readers who have contacted us, and from published case studies in medical journals. We also include a chapter with updated cost-effectiveness statistics that spell out even more clearly the billions of dollars that can be saved by addressing this invisible health crisis. It is our sincere hope that our second edition awakens many more healthcare professionals and consumers to this overlooked and devastating problem. To keep track of our progress and upcoming B12 awareness events, please visit our website at www.b12awareness.org. Sally M. Patchalock, RN, BSN. Jeffrey J. Stewart, DO. Introduction. In 1983, I was the picture of health. I looked fit, I felt great, and I had no idea that a silent crippler lurked inside me, stealthily damaging my brain, nerves, blood vessels, and nearly every organ in my body. Because of my medical training, however, I noticed small signs that something wasn't right, and I knew enough to be worried, even when my doctors dismissed those signs as nothing to worry about. I pursued the few clues that my potentially deadly disease left, eventually obtaining a diagnosis of pernicious anemia, an autoimmune form of vitamin B12 deficiency, and as a result, I'll never suffer the terrible symptoms that this disorder can cause. Millions of other victims of B12 deficiency, many of them also victims of doctors who mistakenly ruled out B12 deficiency with complete blood counts, CBC, or never considered the diagnosis at all, aren't as lucky. Some are infants and toddlers, left developmentally disabled for life. Some are young adults, mistakenly diagnosed as having multiple sclerosis, or told, erroneously, that they are incurably infertile. Others are middle-aged men and women, tormented by balance problems, numb hands or feet, or mysterious shooting leg pains so agonizing that they can barely walk. Some are diagnosed with early-onset dementia or pre-Parkinson's disease in their 30s, 40s, or 50s. Some are people so depressed that they try to kill themselves. Some appear to be full-blown schizophrenics. And still others are seniors living out their days in nursing homes because their doctors think they have Alzheimer's disease. It's too late to completely reverse the symptoms of many of these people, but it's not too late to protect yourselves or the people you love against a similarly tragic fate. In fact, it's extraordinarily simple to prevent or completely reverse the symptoms of B12 deficiency if the deficiency is discovered in time. But this condition isn't like other vitamin deficiencies, and simply taking a standard multivitamin pill won't protect you. Instead, you need an accurate diagnosis and medical treatment. And getting a diagnosis isn't always easy, as I know from experience. I had no idea that an invisible disease was attacking my body when I went for a pre-employment physical examination back in 1983, when I was just 19. The first clue came when the examining physician reviewed my blood tests and commented on my abnormally large red blood cells. In retrospect, I may owe my life to the fact that this test came back positive. Many people suffer neurological damage decades before their blood tests become abnormal, and by then, it's too late. "What kind of diet do you eat?" the doctor asked when he saw my results. When I said that I didn't like vegetables, he told me to eat more of them, dismissing my blood abnormality as merely a sign of a diet low in folic acid. 1 month later, another doctor commented again on my large red blood cells, but concluded that my lab results were insignificant. Like the first doctor, this physician sent me on my way, unaware that he'd just missed diagnosing a disease that could destroy my brain, cripple my body, or even kill me. 2 years later, in nursing school, I bought a manual describing laboratory tests and their meanings. In the section on macrocytosis, the medical term for unusually large red blood cells, the manual outlined two different problems, folic acid deficiency and B12 deficiency, which could cause this abnormality. Since I loved B12-rich meat and didn't like folate-rich vegetables, I could see why my doctor picked low folic acid as a likely culprit in my case. But I wondered why he'd never considered B12 deficiency as well, since most cases of B12 deficiency stem from malabsorption problems rather than diet. Thinking to myself, it can't hurt to be sure, I persuaded a doctor I worked with to order a serum folate and serum B12 level for me. That night, when I mentioned the test to my parents, my father surprised me by saying that back in the 1960s, my grandfather had been diagnosed with pernicious anemia, the most well-known, although not the most common, cause of B12 deficiency. My grandfather's first set of doctors thought he had leukemia and told my dad there was nothing more they could do. It wasn't until my father insisted he be transferred to Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit for a second opinion that he was correctly diagnosed and treated, although it took this second group of doctors nearly 4 weeks to do so. So I wasn't completely caught off guard a few days later when my own B12 test came back low. I started receiving B12 shots, grateful that I'd obtained a diagnosis before I suffered any symptoms. But that wasn't the end of my story. 2 years later, when I needed surgery, I mentioned my B12 deficiency and ongoing treatment to my surgeon, skeptical because she thought I was awfully young to have this problem. She sent me to a hematologist who dismissed the idea that I had a B12 problem, in spite of my earlier diagnosis and abnormal test results showing macrocytosis, low B12, and abnormal Schilling's test. In fact, the hematologist's chart notes, which I read surreptitiously at a later visit, a nurse's instinct, suggested that I was merely a hysterical female, imagining problems that didn't exist. I insisted he run tests anyway. The hematologist had changed his mind by the time his office called me a week later, asking me to come in right away. By then, the tests he'd ordered had revealed that I indeed had juvenile pernicious anemia. In fact, he exclaimed exuberantly, I was the youngest patient he'd ever seen with pernicious anemia in his 20 years of practice. I felt like a rare freak of nature. This time around, the doctor was friendly and informative and, I sensed, secretly relieved that I'd insisted he verify my earlier diagnosis. He certainly wouldn't have detected my problem on his own, even with all the information I'd given him on my first visit, because that surreptitious glance at my chart showed that his suspected diagnoses didn't even include B12 deficiency. In short, although I'd virtually handed this doctor my diagnosis, he nearly missed it. If I'd come to him without the benefit of my nursing training and my assertive and inquisitive personality, or without already knowing that I had a history of B12 deficiency, his failure could have injured or killed me, because if I had passively accepted his initial opinion, I would have stopped receiving the B12 shots that saved my body from the ravages of pernicious anemia. And yet, in a way, I'm thankful to him. Why? Because his disbelief led me to ponder an important question. How many other people suffer or die because their doctors don't consider the simple diagnosis of B12 deficiency. I was lucky because I had enlarged red blood cells, the easiest to spot sign of the problem.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?